Hello, folks. This is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. For today's episode, I checked in with Jamie Brickhouse, who was connecting with me while vacationing on lovely Fire Island. Now, the audio quality was just a little wonky, but no problem. Listen, Jamie's new solo show, I Favor My Daddy, A Tale of Two Sissies, is going to be the basis for his upcoming memoir. His first book, Dangerous When Wet, Booze, Sex, and My Mother, is a huge hit, and you can find out more about all of that at jamiebrickhouse.com. So here I am now with Jamie Brickhouse, who shared this story we call Who's Your Gay Daddy?
So I guess it was Christmas week of 2014, and I was down in Beaumont, Texas, where I grew up. I was visiting my 83-year-old widower father.
Wow.
Daddy Earl, as I did every Christmas. And I'm sitting across from him in the favorite room in his house. My mother, Mama Jean, had built him this fancy house. And so it's his walnut paneled study. And I'm sitting across from him like I had, like, I don't know, countless times since my mother died. And I'm nervous as a sodomite whore in church. Because I feel like I have finally worked up the courage to ask him the big question, which is, Daddy, are you gay?
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, it's something I had long suspected, but I was finally going to push it. Well, I guess what gave me the impetus was a couple of years earlier in 2012, and my mother had been dead for 3 years. Uh-huh. And my then partner, now husband, Michael, or Micah Hayes, as I call him, he and I were watching this movie, Beginners. I don't know if you saw it. It was Christopher Plummer as this 70-year-old man who comes out like a bolt of rainbow-colored chiffon to his son after the mother dies.
Aha.
And Michael turned to me and he said, Earl?
Wow.
And I'm junior to my father's senior, James Earl Brickhouse.
Uh-huh.
I am his only child, living proof that he and my mother had sex at least once in their 44-year uh-huh. marriage. And the two of them, as they never really had the sex talk with me, even though they were bawdy and liked, they had a great sense of humor and loved telling jokes, but they didn't so much talk about, and they fought a lot, and they fought about his drinking and that she made all the money and not him, and their sex life, their barren sex life. Actually, they didn't so much fight about it as joke about it. And
right. Like the Ropers.
They exactly. You know what? Well, yes, exactly. We have the same references. And my father, Daddy Earl, who did all the cooking in the house, he would hold up, a wet, limp noodle and say, oh, my God, it reminds me of me. And my mother, Mama Jean, would heave a comedic sigh and say, oh, it's been so long. I think my hymen's grown back.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, because she said things like that, I used to call her Mrs. Roper. That was one of my nicknames for her.
That's amazing.
Because, Mrs. Roper was the Randy landlady, as you just referenced, on Three's Company, who was always, ready to have sex and her husband wasn't. And when I was two older half brothers. They're my mother's sons from her previous marriage. One of them, Jeffrey, he came out at age 19. Homosexuality seems to run in our family. Yeah. And when he moved out of the house, he came out and he announced he was gay and had a boyfriend. They were moving to nearby Houston, which is about an hour from Beaumont, and an hour and a half. And when he left, I moved into his bedroom. And he left behind some interesting treats, and one of which was this intriguing mass market paperback novel, Tories. And the cover featured a like soap opera handsome man with wavy blue-black hair. And the back copy described Tori as a male hustler made good. And he now owns the hottest nightclub in all of Philadelphia. This really was fiction. And he sleeps nude in satin sheets, and he can have anyone or anything he wants except the one man he wants, George. So I had just started reading it, and Mama Jean pushed open my door. She never knocked, and she was wearing two different earrings. And she said, "Which one goes better with this outfit?" And I said, "The gold hoops." And she said, "Ugh, wouldn't you know, your father likes the pearl drops." "What are you reading?" She looked at the book, and I was like, ugh. And I tried to disguise it with my algebra textbook, but it didn't work. She pulled the book, and she looked at the front cover and flipped it over and read the back copy and just did a double take that would make Lucille Ball proud. "Where did you get this?" I said, "I don't know. It's some book that Jeffrey left behind." "Oh, I might have known." Oh, she was still smarting from Jeffrey coming out. And she marched down the hall, the book in her hands like fresh prey. And she marches to the den where Daddy Earl's barricaded behind his newspaper and a glass of white wine. And she shoves it in his face. "Earl, Earl, look at what Jamie's reading." And he takes the book and he looks at it. And he says, "Well, what is it?" She said, "It's some gay novel that Jeffrey left behind. Did you know he was reading this?" He was like, "Honey, no, he was reading this. I've never seen this book in my life." And then she looked at his glass of white wine and she said, "Oh, you promised me that you weren't going to drink during the week." He said, "Honey, it's only one glass of wine. Earl, it's never just one." Mm. And then poof, the fight began. And she was always on him about his drinking. As I said, he and I are, I'm a junior and his only son and only child. And I realize now as the years go on how much alike I am. Mm. And I'm an alcoholic in recovery. And, you know, my mother was, you know, like, "Oh, you get the drinking from your father." Mm. And, you know, and after she died, we were talking and he said, "You know, your mother said I'm an alcoholic, but I'm not. I can quit when I need to." Mm. I was like, okay. I think I used to think that for a while too. But when I was 15, I came out to my brother, Jeffrey, and I said, "Oh, and, you know, and thanks for all those treats you left behind when you moved out of the house." And he said, "Like what?" And I said, "Like that novel, Tories." He said, "Tories?" I said, "You know, the book about the gay male hustler made good." He said, "That wasn't my book. I've never seen that book in my life." "Then whose book was it?" You know, even my mother, she said, after one of their big fights and I was down there visiting, she said, "I think your father questioned his sexuality before we got married." And I wanted to say, "Not after." But I didn't say that. I just said, "I know he loves you." But so I'm down there this Christmas week, and I think I finally worked up the nerve to ask him this question. And I'd actually kind of had a primer the Easter before this Christmas that same year. I had written a memoir called Dangerous and Wet about booze, sex, and my mother. And he was so excited that I was writing this book, and he couldn't wait for me to publish it, and he couldn't wait for it to come out. And he had been, I also got my writing talent from him. I mean, he wrote a lot in his various promo jobs, and I was a promo man for a while, PR, publicity. I think he wanted to write a book himself and never did. So he was so excited about it, but I was terrified about telling him, you know, about having him read it, because I'd had all my gay sexual alcoholic peccadillos in there, you know, a fling with a crackhead, a priest, a dwarf. So I brought it to him. I let him read it in person Easter weekend. I brought him the manuscript a year before it came out, and he loved it. He didn't take an exception with my alcoholic sexual peccadillos, and he was more fascinated. Like, he was fascinated that Michael and I have an open relationship and that we spend our summers here in Fire Island. He said, "Tell me something, y'all run around in bikinis or naked?" I said both. He said, "Oh, I love it." And but he was most fascinated by the fling I had with the priest. And my father he grew up in Beaumont, Texas, small. It's actually a mid-sized town, but, you know, conservative town near Louisiana border, near Houston. He lived there his whole life. He grew up devout Catholic. And in fact, I think he got more direction from the Catholic Church than he did from his parents. And, you know, went to Catholic school like his generation of Catholics usually did, and was a conservative Republican. And so that was another reason why I was kind of nervous about some of this stuff, although he'd always been accepting of me. You know, he when I came out my freshman year of college, he said, you know, your mother and I love you no matter what you are, but just don't march in any of those parades. You know, just don't be public about it.
Right.
So anyway, he was fascinated by the fling I had with this priest. And he said, well, you know, that fella never should have gone in the priesthood if he knew he was gay. And I said, well, straight or gay, the deal is you're supposed to be celibate. And he was. The priest was supposed to, he told me that he hit me when I was with him. He had left. He was still a priest, but he had taken leave of the priesthood. And he said that he had been celibate for the 14 years he was active. And he said, but if he ever went back to being a priest, he would not be celibate because celibacy fucked up his life. And so I said to Daddy Earl, I said, well, Mamaw, his mother, used to say to me that she was worried that you were going to become a priest because Pawpaw, his father, wasn't Catholic. He said, did you ever want to be a priest? He said, no, I married your mother. And I wanted to say then, well, did you ever think you were gay? But I didn't ask that question. But the next day when he walked through the kitchen with some bananas for his breakfast and he said, fruits for the fruit, I just... I didn't laugh. I just like shot him one of his signature looks of, you know, eyes popped and eyebrows raised. But after he read the book, it opened up these channels of conversation between us that we hadn't had before. And, you know, our love for each other had never been in question, but I was hoping that after my mother died, we would become closer because when she was alive, as you may have perceived, she took up all the emotional space in the room. And so we had these, you know, we had talks about sex and about religion and about, you know, alcoholism and writing and, you know, all these great conversations that we'd never had before. And so the book really opened that up. But again, I came kind of close, but I was like, I'll wait till when I'm down there at Christmas. So there I am sitting across from him in his study. Fox News is on the TV. And usually we would have our political arguments occasionally, but usually we would just let politics remain the red, white, and blue elephant in the middle of the room and focus on what we liked or what we had in common, which was a lot, you know, love of art and theater and old movies on TCM. So I opened my mouth to ask him the question. I think I want to say something like, you know, I can't even quite even just say, are you gay? But did you ever think you were attracted to men? No. I mean, I mean, maybe, but, you know, I pushed aside those feelings a long time ago. And I decided I wanted to follow the church and have a family. And that's what I did. Now, enough of this business. Change the channel to TCM. And there's an old Joan Crawford movie about to begin. But he never said that because I never asked the question.
Oh, my God.
I opened my mouth.
Oh.
And the words wouldn't form. And I thought, you know, he's tired.
Yeah.
And that week, like I said, he was supportive of me, not just being gay, but in recovery from alcohol, even though he still drank. And his drinking increased after my mother died because she wasn't around to control it. When I had gone down there that week, I thought, you know, maybe I'd surprise him and not only ask the question, but in leading up to it, kind of butter him up and maybe he went to Mass every day, except for Saturday, went every morning early. And I thought, you know, maybe I'll go to Mass with him one morning. And he wasn't feeling well that week. He was feeling like he had bronchitis or something. And I thought, maybe I'll have a drink with him. And then I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to screw up my sobriety over this. But I wasn't even tempted because he wasn't drinking that week because he wasn't feeling well. And so he wasn't going to Mass. He wasn't drinking, but he was up enough to still be in the study with me for that possible conversation that I didn't have. And after I didn't ask the question, I thought, kind of like when I let him read the book, I was like, next time, next visit, you know, I'll ask him. And he died 3 days later, unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. And the cause of death was respiratory failure, but the underlying cause was the delirium tremens, the DTs, which of course is what heavy drinkers, alcoholics get from withdrawal. And he wasn't drinking that whole week. And, you know, I just could heard him in my ear saying, I can quit when I need to. And I thought, shit, I didn't ask the question. You know, if I just asked it. And you know, and now I'm thinking, what does it matter what he was or wasn't? Or why does it matter to me? You know, but I had this hope that, you know, he would share what his story was, what happened to him, so that I was witness to it. And of course, part of his story is part of who I am, you know, who he was is part of who I am.
Yeah.
And even though he always accepted me, I wonder, did he never accept himself? Or, you know, did he always accept himself? I mean, maybe he made the decision not to go into the priesthood. I mean, if he ever came close, because he thought he was gay and that was wrong and decided to get married. But I mean, we can also debate that. Then that's not fair to my mother, you know, if he was using marriage to evade it. But
right.
I'm also thinking, you know what? Maybe he accepted who he was, but chose to lead a life that made sense to him, you know? And the way I look at it now, I think of myself as the full-blown version of my father. Like I, James Earl Brickhouse Jr., am all the things that he was, but didn't quite become. Published writer, out gay man,
right,
alcoholic in recovery.
Wow. Yeah. God damn. That's profound. Stick around for more with Jamie Brickhouse.
We'll be right back. Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways you probably haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Jenny Slate, and Dev Patel. In recent weeks, I sat with actor / Veep Julia Louis-Dreyfus and director Richard Linklater. You can listen to Talk Easy on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open up your free iHeart app today, search Talk Easy, and start listening.
We're back.
You know, it's so... I don't know that much about my family's roots, you know, about who... When you go back past my parents and grandparents and all. And so it always disturbs me when people talk about kind of the importance of like intergenerational stuff that's passed down psychologically, stuff that's even like in the genes or DNA and stuff like that. It's such a mystery. And you know, there are so many things you said there that I related to. So Cincinnati, the joke was you don't get out of the South until you hit Columbus. And it was very, very conservative Catholic. My parents were liberal Democrats.
Did you go to Catholic school?
Yes, including the Jesuits.
And so you have a good education.
Very good education. But I knew I was gay from the beginning of consciousness and beginning to put language together. I was trying to get with the boy next door when I was still in diapers.
I wasn't that advanced.
As his mother told me. But I later learned that my Uncle Bill, my dad's brother, had gone to Gethsemane when Thomas Merton became famous for being a monk there to become a monk. And then it was like the Sound of Music. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, you're too crazy for here. You're too kooky. So he married... my aunt, she happened to be a woman who loved to paint naked ladies, just watercolors all over the house of naked ladies. And my uncle, he loved to dress up in drag and do lip syncing to, you know, Broadway musical numbers. My father...
Sounds like a lavender marriage.
Yeah. My father tried to go to Gethsemane to become a monk, also a big fan of Thomas Merton. while he was engaged to my mom. And that was literally like the sound of music, because they were like, no, go fuck that girl. But my father, I always want, now he had five children. Uh-huh. So, you know, if he had any gayness in him, he was probably bi. But he was very disappointed that I waited till I was 18 to come out. I waited till the plane tickets for New York City had been purchased and the financial aid for NYU was all squared away. Then I came out to them. And she had tears in her eyes, my mom, because she couldn't deal with it.
Yeah.
And my dad was a little teary because he was like, I asked you a couple years ago. It was true. When I was 16, he took me out on a long walk to go get a milkshake. And he started listing these artists. My dad loved literature. And he started going to the opera by himself when he was 10 years old in the 1950s.
Mm, okay.
And he later told me that he was very aware of getting looks from some of the men at the opera.
I'll bet.
But anyway, he took me on this walk when I was 16.
But that was a busy bathroom at the intermission.
Right. he took me out on this walk when I was 16 and he started listing these art. He was like, there are a lot of artists that I really admire, like Leonardo and Michelangelo and... List went on, like, you know, Tennessee Williams, Oscar Wilde. I started to put together, oh, all these guys have something in common.
Yeah.
Walt Whitman. And he got around to saying they loved in a different way. And I wonder if you've ever wondered about that or felt that way. And I was not ready. I was just, I had to come out on my own terms when I was ready. So I was like a deer in headlights.
Yeah, yeah.
And said, no, no, no. And so he was hurt when a couple of years later I did reveal that I was gay. And I said, well, I just wasn't ready. And mom said, well, you said you were completely ready to tell us when you were 12. Because by the time I was 12, I could say it out loud and I was journaling about it. But I was like, yeah, but if I had, you would have said, you're 12.
What do you know?
Right. So it's really funny because the week before I came out to them, I was doing dishes with my mom. She was drying, I was washing. And the subject came up of my uncle JC, who was a priest. And she had tears in her eyes. And I was like, Mom, what's going on? And little did I know that there was something maybe going on between Uncle JC and he was becoming very friendly with a nun. Uh-huh. So mom had tears in her eyes and she said, oh, I was just thinking what a terrible tragedy it is that Uncle JC can't have intimacy with a partner. And I was like, oh, okay.
My mother used intimacy, too. That was that word.
Yes.
That generation, intimacy.
Yes. And then I came out, and then a week later, we're right back there doing the dishes again.
Uh-huh.
And that's when she said to me, have you ever considered becoming a priest? Because that's the way it works.
Yes.
The next thing I knew, when I was 17, 18, I took this trip to Peru with the Jesuits. And one Jesuit in particular started really breathing down my neck about how talented I was at communicating and stuff like that. And yeah. I might make a really good priest, was basically his idea. And he called my mom after the Peru trip, and she said, well, I'm a little concerned. He jokes a lot about certain things. I think he might have an anal fixation.
Wow.
Because I, you know, of course I do, and that's true. I do to this day constantly make jokes about butts and anuses and whatnot. But yeah, it was really striking, especially because this priest was so obviously gay and many years later came out. But I now realize, oh, that was part of a hinting conversation. He was colluding with my mom to try to get me into the priesthood you know, I think that there was unconscious communication there where she was like, I want to get this kid hidden away with his homosexuality, you know, have him take a vow of chastity and get into that closet of the priesthood. And that's the place where this fella was. So I think it's so common for there to be these unspoken conversations in these families, and especially Catholic families, with the kind of neatness of thinking, well, I could become celibate and become a priest.
As long as you don't act on it, you're okay.
Yeah.
I had a similar experience, you know, you were talking about how your father asked you earlier on, and my mother did that, but it was scary. It was after my brother Jeffrey came out, and she was crying, and she wasn't handling it well. This was in the, early 80s, late 70s, something like that. And she said, Jeffrey he told me he's gay, homosexual. Do you know what that is? I said, yeah. And I think I was in eighth grade, and she said, do you think you have tendencies like that? Tendencies.
Wow.
That was the other word that they, you know. And she said, because tell me now. If you do, I'll take you to the psychiatrist. And I said, nope, I sure don't. And I went back to my room to do my homework, where the original Broadway cast album of Mame was playing, because I love to do my homework. No, I don't have tendencies. No. Mm-mm. And when I told you I came out to them my freshman year, similar to you, although I waited till I was ensconced in school at university, and I came out my first semester of my freshman year, and I was in a playwriting class, and I wrote this scene about two best friends, a guy and a girl, kind of a precursor to Will and Grace. And the guy's questioning his sexuality. I didn't call him outright gay, and it was a comedic thing. Anyway, my parents loved that I was writing, and I told them I was in this playwriting class, and I said, well, our first assignment is this 5-minute scene. Well, we want to see it. And so I mailed it to him, and I remember the conversation like this. My mother called and said, oh, we read your piece. We just love it. You know, blah, blah, blah. And then she said, you don't have tendencies like that, do you? And I said, yes. And she said, Earl, get on the phone. Jamie's got to tell us something.
Oh.
And so that was the other conversation we had when he read the manuscript. When I wrote about it in the book, I told it that way. And he said, no, that's not how it happened. He said, we were both on the phone. And see, mom, and she was usually the one to be confrontational and to, you know, and to speak the truth. And she never had a thought she didn't speak and all this. But she had blinders when it came to my homosexuality. And so he said, no, I'm the one. He said, we were both on the phone. And after we talked about the scene, he said, I'm the one who said, are you writing about yourself? And he also said when and then I came out to him on the phone. And then when I went home for Thanksgiving, you know, we talked about it some more. And that's when he took me out to our first father, gay son lunch. And he said, before he gave me his one bit of advice, which is not to march in any of those parades, he said, I think I saw it in you before your mother did. Which, I mean, doesn't make him gay, but I mean, it just, you know, that he was more intuitive or perceptive about it, kind of like your father.
Yeah. This is one of those intergenerational issues where it really makes sense that the son might be able to become what the father couldn't completely embrace, because, I mean, it was a different world. Yeah. So much has changed.
And also your line about talking about your uncle.
Yeah.
Where did he go to?
Gethsemane. It was a Trappist monks, I think. Yeah, I think.
But there was someone. It was someone that said, "You need to, like, you're too much for here."
Oh yeah. Kind of like to Maria in The Sound of Music, like you've got too much going on to be a silent monk. You know, go back out into the world.
Oh,
you know?
Right. Well, yeah. But they'd be often. That's the case with, like, loving parents in small conservative towns, you know, of a child that's gay or out there. It's like, you know what? You're too much for this town. You need to go to the big city. Even my mother said, you know, she pushed me to go to New York. You know, I was thinking about staying in San Antonio, where I had gone to college, for a year or so to figure things out. She's like, San Antonio? No, New York is where you need to be, especially with your lifestyle.
You know? Oh my gosh. Yeah, I think I must have been like 7 years old when it was Time magazine, I think, that had the cover was The Homosexuals. And there were a picture of two male hands holding on the front cover of Time. And there was a photo in there of some bar in New York City where a go-go boy was dancing on a stage. And you could see most of his butt in the photo. And at like seven, I was like, I want to move to that city.
I had the similar experience. I was a little bit older than you. I think it must have been when the AIDS crisis was happening. And I was in Beaumont, you know, a kid watching the news, and they had clips of like topless men disco dancing, I think in Fire Island. And they were talking about, you know, how much sex they have. And I was like, please don't stop before I get there. You know?
And there you are now.
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, and my father, I'm sorry that, you know, I never met Michael wanted me to bring my father out here to Fire Island.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. What a trip that would have been. Holy cow. Yeah.
But, you know, this was this story. I was saying it was from my show, but actually I told this story, or I started telling this story, and then it turned into my show, which I've been doing for the last few years. I Favor My Daddy, A Tale of Two Sissies. And then it's also my second memoir.
You're a master of the subtitle. Oh my gosh. Well, it is at least really sweet to know that he read your first book and that he was so excited about it.
I know. I'm so glad, because I was going to chicken out. I was going to wait until it was closer to publication date. So that if he had a bad reaction, I couldn't it'd be too late for me to chicken out. And I'm so glad I didn't do that, because I never would have had that gift.
Well, may he rest in peace.
Yes. James Earl Brickhouse Sr., or J. Earl, or just Earl, as he was known.
Raise a non-alcoholic beverage in his honor. And that's that. Look for Jamie's memoir based on his solo show called I Favor My Daddy, A Tale of Two Sissies, coming soon. You can find Jamie on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook, where he tells a true story every day in high heels. Folks, today's the day. Take a risk.